ABC Radio is part of your community, telling local stories that matter to you. So for local news, sport, and to find out what's happening in your community, stay tuned right here on your radio and on ABC Listen.
Well, it seems that there's always a new anti-aging fad filling our social media feeds. Some of them are well-meaning, encouraging us to moisturise our faces, put on 50+, drink more water to keep hydrated, etc. We know that's great for your skin, but it seems our obsession with looking young isn't always harmless. Words such as Sephora kids or cosmetic orexia are entering the internet's lexicon. And we're hearing reports of children as young as 8 years old becoming dangerously obsessed with skincare. Meanwhile, more people are turning to unregulated injectables to reverse the clock on the aging skin. Our resident dermatologist, Dr. Ritu Gupta, is here to talk you through some of these trends, the dangers that could be associated with them. And if you have any questions, call in now, 1300 222 702. Hi, Ritu. Good to speak with you.
Hi, Catherine. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well. Thank you. Although a little bit alarmed about this term called Sephora Kids. For listeners who don't know what Sephora is, a large makeup chain, and there's a thing called Sephora Kids. What is happening out there with this move for young kids to really want to be into this skincare and healthcare world?
Well, look, I mean, I think little girls have always, you know, borrowed their mum's lipstick and put on makeup, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. But what is concerning, and I'm seeing it even in my own practice, is young kids, very young kids, as you mentioned, 8, 10, 15, spending hours putting on multiple different skincare products, anti-aging products, which is blatantly ridiculous. What 15, 8, 10, 20-year-old needs anti-aging. Using expensive serums, you know, snake venom, bird's nest, snail mucin, using all this sort of stuff, spending hours that they shouldn't be spending in front of the mirror, staring into the mirror. And I think that there's a lot of social pressure as well. We're seeing that these products are marketed to kids. Some of them have Disney and Pixar and, you know, bright colours. And kids are not able to make judgments about these things. And if they're spruiked by influencers, if everyone in the playground is using them, it becomes a real minefield for parents. I mean, economically, ethically, and then, of course, then there are the actual health issues that, you know, they're using products that are strong and active, these anti-aging products, vitamin A's and acids, alpha hydroxy acids, beta hydroxy acids and the like, and they're causing damage to their skin, which wasn't a problem in the first place.
And are you seeing people presenting to you whose kids have done this and they're looking to fix up perhaps the damage that they've caused, or how is this presenting in your rooms?
Well, look, I have certainly seen that. I've seen kids presenting with allergic contact dermatitis, so angry inflamed rashes on their face because triggered by active ingredients that their skin can't tolerate. And so the irony is they actually start with perfectly normal skin and then they end up with a problem. Now, when you get these skin rashes and you damage the skin's barrier, the problem is then you can get infection. So, you know, it becomes a cycle. They can get bacterial, fungal, yeast infection. So that's an issue. The other thing I see is that when I'm seeing someone about acne, for instance, and they're there with their parent, often their mother, and I say to them, part of any acne consultation is asking what skincare they're using. And sometimes they'll come out with a huge long list, which is, or they might say, oh, no, I'm not using much. And the mum will go, oh, no, but what about that? And what about this? And what about this?
And so, are these things they're all getting on the internet that aren't well, tested on humans or?
Well, there are things like that, you know, starfish powder and snail mucin and things like that. But then there are also just a bunch of stuff that they're buying either from the pharmacy or they're buying them from the big chains or they're buying them online. And, you know, I see it as part of my role, obviously, to dispel myths. That's a great part of any acne consultation, any consultation about skincare. And just to... I think a helpful thing for parents, if you've got a child or a teen or a tween who's doing this and you're worried also about all the time they're spending where they should be out being kids or they should be studying or whatever, I think I think a good question to ask is, look, what are you hoping to achieve? You know, rather than just saying this is crazy, which is obviously the knee-jerk response,
yes,
and is not incorrect,
yes,
but is to say, look, what is it that you're trying to achieve? And try and find out. Now, maybe they say, oh, look, everyone's using this, and, you know, you could dig deeper into that. Or they might say, oh, look, you know, I want to have that Korean glass skin, which is popularized, which is ridiculous because no skin looks like that. Real skin has pores. Real skin has, you know, if they're young, pimples. It has splodges and blodges. You know, those people that they're seeing with this impossibly incredible glass skin, that's using filters and things. Mm. And these kids don't know that, and they can't recognise that. So they're sort of being exploited as well.
Mm. I've just had a text in here, a question for you, Ritu. Is there a cure for beard rash where white, flaky, itchy sores appear under a beard hair on face?
Well, again, it comes down to diagnosis. So that could be seborrheic dermatitis, which we talked about actually the last time I was on, which is the medical term for dandruff, but can commonly occur in the beard. It could be folliculitis, so it could be low-level infection at the base of the hair follicle, which can be usually bacterial but sometimes can be yeast-related. It could be psoriasis. They're the three immediate things that jump out at me. Mm. And although cure is not a word that we use very commonly in dermatology, I'm afraid to say, management certainly is. So I think the first thing is go and see your GP and see what they have to say. Mm. And if they're uncertain or they need the help of a specialist, then they'll send you to see a dermatologist. Mm. And something like that is often just one consultation, and we can make a diagnosis and give you some treatment and a plan.
Mm. Is there any time and scenario that you would recommend skincare to kids?
Look, I think definitely kids need to be educated about sunscreen, and that's actually a really nice segue. You can say to them, look, you know, I know you want to use some skincare, and there's nothing wrong with that. So let's get you a nice simple cleanser, a moisturiser that you can use at nighttime, and a moisturiser with sunscreen. That's great. Mm-hmm. That way, you know, you're not stopping them from doing something, but you're actually instilling good habits, and you're explaining to them that, look, using the sunscreen is going to mean that you don't actually need all those ridiculous anti-aging ingredients that, you know, you've gone and purchased or you've got from your friends, etc.
You've spoken about the pressure. You know, a lot of kids are doing it and a lot of parents are at sea with it a little bit. And some, you know, kids, parents don't mind and they let them go for it. If someone's in that sort of position, how can they tell if something that they're going to buy and put on their face, on their skin, which we know is porous, then gets, you know, into their bodies, how can they know if it's safe?
Well, look, if you're buying it from a store or if you're buying it from the pharmacy, then, you know, most things have gone through, you know, some sort of process in order to be sold here in Australia. The danger is when you're buying it on the internet and it's not regulated. Having said that, things that are purely applied to the surface of the skin have far laxer regulations than actual prescription things. So cosmetics have far less regulation. Kids don't need anything that says anti-aging should be steered away from because they don't need it. I mean, they simply don't need it, and invariably it will be irritating to the skin. They don't need anything that's got acid in it. They don't need just a simple moisturiser. If they've got an oily skin, then you're looking for an oil-free or non-comedogenic moisturiser. I would recommend the pharmacy. That's the best place to start, you know, even if it's
one of the pharmacist.
Yeah, you can speak to the pharmacist, but one of the bigger pharmacies, those products by and large are much cheaper than the stuff that you're going to get in all the beauty brands and in, you know, the department stores, and they're going to be simpler. Ideally for kids, you know, we don't want to introduce things that have got a whole lot of fragrance because that can cause sensitization and develop allergy. Also, a lot of kids, you know, in Australia we have very high rates of eczema or dermatitis, so that's really common in childhood. So those kids have even more sensitive skin. Their skin skin barrier is naturally impaired. So we want to be extra careful with people like that. Mm.
Dee's texted in making the point saying, "Hi, Catherine, I clean houses for a job and most of my clients have young daughters aged 9 to 12. I see in their bedrooms many containers of skincare products. Surely they do not need these." And look, a question here for you from Wendy, Ritu. What about the trend of applying makeup on little babies for the perfect Instagram shot? Apparently it's a thing. What does the doctor think of that?
Oh my goodness. Well, the doctor's never heard of that, but yeah. I'm immediately alarmed.
Yeah.
Really? Goodness. I think that's crazy. I mean, babies are beautiful and babies have beautiful skin. Oh. I mean, I know in some cultures, including my own, actually, Indian culture, they do sometimes use something called kajal, which is kohl, which is basically, you know, eyeliner on little babies as a cultural thing,
yes.
You know, for photographs and stuff. Like I've seen a photo of myself, age one, with that. Mm. I think that's ridiculous. And again, you know, you don't want to be applying a whole bunch of ingredients to skin that is fresh and new and that can then become sensitized and develop allergies later on.
Mm-hmm. That text that I read out before from Dee, we've got her on the line now. Hi there, Dee. How are you going?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, look, I'm well. Rita's here as well. So you've noticed with your work that you do when you're cleaning people's homes that you are seeing a proliferation of these sorts of things in little girls' bathrooms and bedrooms?
In their bedrooms. They have little cabinets. Sometimes they're refrigerated, sometimes they're not. And they've got a whole heap, like heaps more of face products than I'd ever use. And I'm 60.
Yeah, wow.
Do you know what I mean? It is becoming a real big issue. And some of these little girls are only 9.
Wow.
And I think the oldest in the houses that I clean, the oldest girl is 12. She just started high school this year, so that must be about 12 or 13.
Yeah.
But from such a young age. And it is a concern.
Oh, yeah. Like, particularly... Say that again, Rishi, sorry.
I just said the ethics of advertising to children, you know, are such a worry. I mean, we have rules about alcohol advertising when kids are watching television and cigarettes aren't allowed to be advertised. So, you know, I do think there needs to be regulation, and certainly the internet is just a big, wide, scary world out there that people can import things with, you know, that haven't even been tested on humans, let alone on children.
Mm. Dee, thank you very much for calling in. Andrew's on the line now as well. Hi, Andrew. You've got a question for Ritu?
G'day. A very novice person here when it comes to skincare, I'm sorry. But I've just come in the car and I've heard the conversation and it's sparked something for me to ask. And I'm sorry if I sound like a real novice here, but do we actually even need moisturizer? Does our body provide what we need for our skin? And if we do need moisturizer, well, that's great for me to know, but does the moisturizers or whatever's being sold actually do what we expect it to do? Does it moisturize our skin? I did see a microscope picture of skin years ago, and it, to me, it looked like a crocodile when it was zoomed in. So I thought to myself, how's the skin going to absorb anything? So sorry to be very boring.
They're good questions, very good questions. So does every skin need moisturiser? The answer to that is no. If you've got a naturally oily or waxy complexion, you don't need moisturiser. And patients are always really surprised when I say that. But if you've got a dry skin or if your skin feels tight, then yes, you need a moisturiser. And moisturisers do work. So there's basically two types of moisturisers. There are what are called humectants. And what that means is it attracts water into the skin. So if you think back to that picture of the skin you saw, the microscopic picture where it looked like crocodile skin, so the skin is made of cells, which are kind of like, a good analogy is like a brick wall. So they're like the bricks of the wall. And so if we attract moisture into that, that acts like the cement between the bricks. Mm-hmm. And then the other type of moisturizer is called an emollient, which is moisturizing the skin. So the best types of moisturizers are a combination of both, but they don't need to be expensive and they don't need to be fancy. If someone's got a sort of just slightly dry complexion, then something that's in a pump pack tends to have a higher water concentration and a lower fat concentration. So that sort of moisturiser is good for them. If someone has a very dry skin, then as a general rule, if they use something that's in a tub or tube, it has a lower water concentration and a higher fat concentration, and it will be more moisturising. It's really just as simple as that.
Well, there you go. Thank you so much.
Are you going to be taking up the trend of moisturising your face now, Andrew?
I'm going to have a real good look in the mirror to see if I actually need anything. Maybe I should ask other people.
Well, I'm thrilled that you joined in to ask the question. And no question is a novice question. They're all very valid. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
See you, Andrew.
Okay.
Lots of questions coming in on the text line as well, Ritu. This one here. Hi, Catherine. It's a very worrying trend, as I know at times of extreme stress, I become very fixated on my skin and skincare and have needed a psychologist's support as it's a way of controlling something during stress, like eating disorders. So I guess, you know, that is one, when you look at the motivations, you spoke about that before, you know, the why are the kids doing this? I mean, that is another lens to look at it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing too about skin is it's so accessible. So as a dermatologist, sometimes we see people with skin picking, which is actually more a psychological issue. But what happens is they take their anxiety out on their skin, or they become obsessed with some imperceptible blemish on the skin and they pick to try and fix it. And the tragic thing is they actually cause themselves scarring when there was no problem there to start with.
Yeah, wow. This one here from a parent, can you please ask your guest what a normal good skincare routine would look like for a teenager who suffers from acne on her face and back? She tends to have oily skin.
So for someone with acne, we want oil-free or non-comedogenic. They're the buzzwords to look for. So oil-free moisturiser, oil-free sunscreen, and a light, gentle cleanser. And then if your teen has got acne on the face and the back, the thing about acne is it is a medical condition. It is eminently treatable. Don't tell them or don't let them think that they have to just suffer through it. Go and see the GP and get some prescription treatment or see a dermatologist if need be. And, you know, and that's really all. That's all they need. I wouldn't be using a lot of scrubs and do over cleaning. It's not about being dirty. That's a very common misconception with acne. And then what happens is it disrupts the skin barrier function, as I mentioned before, then you end up with other problems, infection, etc.
Hi, this one from Sylvia. Hi, I just joined the conversation. What's your thoughts on microneedling?
Well, microneedling, it depends for what purpose. I think there are much better options for treatment if we're talking about treatment of prominent pores or lines and wrinkles or acne scarring. There are better options than microneedling these days. Microneedling, when you have it done at a beautician or non-specialist practice, the depth that they can go into the skin is fairly limited, which means that the results are going to be fairly limited. So although it might be a reasonably inexpensive treatment, I think you need to look at what it is that you're actually trying to achieve. What is it that you want treated? Because there are much stronger and more effective treatments available. But again, it's about, you know, assessment and diagnosis.
And what would some of those alternative ones be?
Well, there might be laser therapy, there may be radio frequency devices that stimulate collagen remodeling and elastic tissue. I mean, there's a whole list. Again, it depends. It might be high intensity focused ultrasound, skin tightening, all sorts of options.
Because there's a lot out there for people who want to look at that. It's hard to know, and they're expensive, right? But they're hard to know what to do, which ones to do.
And look, don't beat yourself up trying to become an expert in these things and reading about them on the internet. The best thing is go and see an actual specialist who is an expert, and you know that what they have and what they use and what they've gone to the trouble of purchasing is effective, it's safe, it's well studied, and that they're going to use doses that are appropriate for whatever it is that's trying to be treated.
We've got a few minutes left on this chat here on 702 ABC New South Wales, where it's 2:28. I'm speaking with Dr. Ritu Gupta, our resident dermatologist who checks in every fortnight or so to answer your questions. Jennifer has called in to join the conversation. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. So I'm just curious about the makeup question. What is the actual age? I find any young child actually wearing makeup quite disturbing. But someone I know has actually been putting makeup on their very young daughter who's 5.
Well, look, medically there's no age. Makeup is applied to the surface of the skin, so it shouldn't be penetrating the skin. I think it becomes more of an issue of what sort of values are you instilling into that child and what message are you giving them rather than a medical or dermatological question. But, yes, I would say that it is a concern, absolutely a concern. Mm.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because I just find, they're youthful, they're gorgeous young creatures.
Absolutely,
and, they're just starting to think about their self-image and, and if they need to put paint on their face, that sort of somehow might psychologically be impairing. Yeah. Anyway.
Exactly.
I think it sounds a little counterintuitive for all of us who have sort of been there, done that. Thanks so much, Jennifer. Stephen's with us now. Hi, Stephen.
Hi.
Hello. I was just wondering what your specialist thinks of the properties of aloe vera on the skin?
Look, aloe vera has some antibacterial properties. It's quite cooling and soothing. Beyond that, does it have any sort of magical properties that people often think it does? I don't think it does. I don't think that there's a lot of evidence to support that. But I don't see that there's really any harm with aloe vera. It can certainly be soothing, on burns, and it has a cooling effect. There are other things that are stronger. For instance, if you burn yourself using a steroid cream or ointment, will take the inflammation away a lot faster and will reduce the damage that the burn will do to the skin, reduce the risk of scarring. So there are stronger things that can be used, but I don't see that there's really any issue with using it as a first step.
Hope that helps, Stephen. I've got this interesting, really cute story. We've only got a little second left, but I was trapped backpacking as a kid. I was in Barbados with my girlfriend, Ellen, and we were, 20, and we'd gotten quite sunburnt one day, and there was a man walking behind us quite close, and we were a little bit worried because it was a dark alley. And then all of a sudden he brings out this big stem, like a cactus stem, and a big knife, and he cuts it and he goes, "Here, have this." And he put it on our arms, and it was from the aloe vera tree, and it just soothed us immediately, despite being absolutely petrified about what was to happen, which was he was just helping us, and it felt immediately soothing. Annie's just joined in for one last call in this segment. Hi, Annie.
Hello there. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Not at all. What have you got to ask?
Okay. I'm talking about my adult daughter who has endometriosis, and I've noticed randomly of late, that's once every few months, she'll get quite a hormonal outbreak that would be more typical of a teenager. And what I'm wondering is whether you see a correlation between monthly use of over-the-counter strong painkillers to combat the endometriosis and, therefore the strain on her liver and maybe microbiome mitochondria and the outbreak, whether that could be maybe linked of the skin on the face,
So you're asking whether her taking sort of anti-inflammatory medication and pain medication could be contributing to outbreaks of acne?
Yes, I am asking that.
Not to my knowledge, no, they're not side effects of those medications. There are certain medications that can cause acne, particularly oral steroids can cause acne. People taking hormones like testosterone can cause acne. People taking whey protein powders is a big cause of acne that people don't realise. People putting oil on their skin can cause acne. It's more likely that it's actually the fact that she's with the endometriosis, and I don't know her details, obviously, but if she has something called polycystic ovarian syndrome, where people can have a hormone imbalance, then they can often get a flare of acne when they ovulate, so mid-cycle. So that might be something where, you know, a post-adolescent female is getting spots every month, typically on the lower face. So it's probably more related to her underlying condition rather than the treatment that she's taking for her condition, if that makes sense.
Can you just repeat what that thing's called again? Post, what was it called?
Oh, PCOS is the shorthand, but okay. Polycystic ovarian syndrome. I'm sure if she's under the care of a doctor for her endometriosis.
And have you got anything you could say for treatment for that? If it is that, for example, if it was that, what would you say could be the avenue for treatment?
Well, treatment of the PCOS is not dermatology. I mean, that would be treated by the GP or potentially a gynecologist. But treatment of the acne, we treat acne of that type in the way that we would treat any type of acne. So it's with a bunch of different things, sometimes anti-acne antibiotics, sometimes the oral contraceptive pill. You know, it really depends upon the person and the nature of the acne and what they've had before or not.
Thank you very much for that call, Annie. And Ritu, as always, not enough time with all the questions that are coming in. Really appreciate your time and look forward to in 2 weeks' time when we chat again.
Pleasure. Thanks so much.
Join the conversation anytime. Call 1300 222 702.
Afternoons with Catherine Robinson.
On 702 ABC Radio Sydney and ABC Radio New South Wales.